Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And now, Hangar 56 Media presents Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Here we are, Spike's Car Radio.
Today's episode sponsored by Blue Chew, collectingcars.com, and Mac Weldon, three of our favorite sponsors, and living legend, everybody's car guy, everybody's favorite car guy, favorite. Bruce Myers here.
Yeah,
we had you on the show a while back when we were on podcast one.
3 years ago.
And then the fans right away said, you got to get Bruce back. And I said, absolutely. And then I totally forgot. And
and here we are 1,000 days later.
Yeah.
Well, we lost 2 years.
Yeah.
It could have been a year ago.
Yeah.
And this happens all the time. I just forget about everybody who's been on the show. So we have been meaning to have you back on. And I can't remember. Oh, I got an email from the Peterson Auto Museum that said that tours were starting again, that the museum was opening up, they were doing private tours. And I said, and I love the museum, and I, you know, support the museum. And I thought, Bruce Meyer, we should have Bruce Meyer back on the show. So, and now you're here.
Well, and I appreciate it, and I love talking about the Peterson.
And we'll get to that. I want to talk about the decades of Southern California car history that you know about, and your own personal history. I called you up and I said, hey, can you do the show? Johnny Lieberman's out of town. Matt Farah is not available. Jerry's in New York. Do you want to sit in? And where were you? You on a rally, right? It was Sunday we were chatting.
Right, exactly. So 3 years ago, the Porsche 356 registry.
Put that mic right up to your mouth there.
I did their annual event in Bend, Oregon. And so I actually rounded up 26 of my 356 loving pals, and we had planned this whole rally. This was like last year, and then of course it was canceled along with everything else. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I just kind of this year it came back around in a much abbreviated way. So we got six guys. We decided, well, we're going to drive up to Bend. Have you ever been to Bend? Have you ever been to Oregon?
No. Well, Portland,
neither.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go up there to riot every once in a while.
Yeah.
I play both sides, too.
That's right.
It's just, you know, it's whoever's got the most heat that week.
That's right. Well, it was spectacular. So the group of us decided we really didn't want to subject our wives to driving up Central California all the way, because our first stop was in Eureka or Ukiah. One of those two. And so we decided to fly to Santa Rosa, which was a big first step, you know. We flew to Santa Rosa. We had our car shipped there. There were seven of us. And then we went to visit a friend of ours, Mark Montanos, and he collects interesting cars. And then we went to a collection, John McCaw. Do you know the McCaw?
Yeah, sure.
So John McCaw keeps his things in Medford. It's probably a secret I'm letting out, but He has Ginger Rogers Ranch there that is just crazy.
Really?
He has barns full of really cool
We've
stuff.
Heard about this place.
Don't you remember our friend Moise ended up going up there, and he said every time he turned around, there was like a little choo-choo with booze There was like some sort
no,
of
a there
bar.
Were cat. I don't know that it was Moise. I thought it was someone else who was telling us they had old Cadillacs for everybody to use on the estate and these priceless race cars and.
That's closer.
Yeah. It's
closer than the choo-choo of Booth.
Closer than the choo-choo.
Yeah. That sounds. It sounded amazing.
Well, you know, the McCaw brothers,
right?
Bruce, Craig, and John. I mean, you know, their collections combined.
What do they have there? Can you say a few of the things that you saw there?
Well, of course, you know, all of them have GTOs. You know how that works.
And you know how that works. Yeah. No, I don't know how that works, Bruce. I don't fucking know how that works.
So how many GTOs? Between, one for each brother, or
well, they one for each bro.
Wow.
And
what are they? And what do they look like? Are they just red GTOs?
Didn't Jerry drive one? The red one.
I don't know.
And I know that at one time Petrolicious did.
Well,
one
I want to hear.
That's
I want to hear
right.
what he saw. What did
That's
he see?
That's right. Petrolicious, exactly right. One of the early ones was with John McCaw's Series 2.
Right.
And that's what he has up there. I don't want to run down all the cars he has because that's probably
Well, let's just talk about those GTOs. There's that one and what other one?
Well, Craig has the green one that was, all of a sudden I'm so old I forget the guy's name. And had all the green Ferraris.
I don't know.
You know, kind of leaf green.
Really?
Oh, gosh.
God, that's an amazing color car for a GTO. I don't know that I've ever seen that.
Yeah, it's the only one.
If I can pull it up.
And green Ferrari GTO.
Yeah,
and
okay. I know how to Google.
Thank you.
And then what's the third one?
Wait, how do you spell green, Bruce?
M-O-N-E-Y.
M-O-N-E-Y.
Well, what's the third one?
Oh, well, man, yeah, this car. Oh, yeah, I have seen it. Here, look at this, Zuckerman. Look at this car.
Whoa. Holy fuck.
That's it, right?
That is it.
Wow.
Does it say who? Well, anyways, that's Craig's.
Sterling Moss.
Sterling
Made
Moss
for Sterling Moss.
I mean, it's serious. Anyways, so.
And then is this a separate GTO?
That's a different GTO.
Wow. You're part of the GTO club, right? You know all these guys.
Do you know, I was saying to a friend of mine who bought an F1, McLaren F1. I said, there are three clubs that I'm aware of. One, and I'm a member of none of them, really. You know, I guess kind of one. But
you are world's poorest billionaire.
You know what? I just have you know what? It's good. It's like having airplanes. It's good to have a friendly airplane.
World's poorest billionaire.
In that group.
In
maybe.
That group. What was that? I missed it.
You are world's poorest billionaire. I thought
in that group, yes, you're the piker. Oh, you're such a loser, Bruce.
You guys.
And I swear, Bruce, you are the one who made that joke when you and I were talking
last night. I can tell I'm a little slow.
Yeah.
But
tell me about
clubs.
these three clubs.
There's F1, McLaren F1.
Yeah. So, okay.
HC Alpha.
Okay.
And GTO.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, if you know, those
Now, when you say clubs, do they actually meet?
Oh, they have rallies. And only F1s, only GTOs, and only HC Alphas.
Wow.
And anybody else is not welcome.
Ah.
And all those cars are, you know, like mega cars. And some guys, I would say half the guys are members of all three clubs, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And I won't mention, what do we got going on?
What do we got going on? A lawnmower?
No, a putt-putt just pulled up with our lunch.
Yes.
I have no idea what I'm looking at here. It's probably the guy who stole our 87.
It's like winning the Oscar, the Tony, and the Emmy.
It's a trifecta of greatness.
That was a beautiful blonde. Only in Los Angeles would you see this. It's a beautiful blonde girl.
She coming in here?
We'll get her in here. Come on, first.
Okay, no, she finally stopped on what sounds like a two-stroke mini bike.
Yes.
Yeah.
With some important news she's about to run in with.
It's really funny. So you think that there's half the guys are members of all three.
Correct.
And then do you think there's guys that have got two of the three?
There's probably some that have two of the three. And other, I think almost, yeah, and then there might be a few of them that just have one.
Wow.
Do you think, okay, if you were going to be in one, what's the biggest bragging rights? The GTO?
I think the GTO, probably. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's just everybody knows the GTO.
Yeah.
And the F1, you know, they're just different clubs, but they do exclusive rallies or events. Like they're planning now that the next GTO, they do it every 5 years with a GTO. So that's every fifth year anniversary. And next year they're doing one back east in the U.S. But they're normally in Europe, and also Ferrari gets involved with all these. And they're pretty spectacular.
I mean,
you know, Chip Conner has a GTO, and for a long time his wife didn't care to go on all these rallies. She was home,
lucky him,
you know, being a mother and a responsible mother. And so Chip would invite me. I mean, I had the thing going for a while, you know?
Right?
Then she decided, she went on one. Holy cow, these people are eating well, and it's a great group. Right. So
I was asked, it's fun.
I was not invited back.
Oh, did you do some of the driving when you were in that seat?
Yeah.
Wow,
it's special.
And what did you think?
I mean, it's an amazing car. It really is an amazing car. I have, you know, the short wheelbase, which came before the GTO, but I'll tell you that GTO has got the power and there's great visibility, and I mean, there's a reason it did well.
And
it's very limited, you know. So,
wow.
Only a few lucky guys are in that club.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that club now, you'd have to have $50 million. To get into that club?
Probably more. I would say, you know, you wouldn't buy the one for 50.
Right. The guys buying those things want the best of the best.
Well, is that 70?
No, we're in the hundreds. You know, don't you talk to Donald Osborne, that number's 110 right now.
I don't know.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the owners of those cars are financially strong. I mean, I don't think any number would buy Chip Conner's. That would probably be the last car I'd ever sell. And I know some of the other guys that have them. And I think if there was a market price for a really good one, it would probably be 70 to 80. But there's only been one of those sold in the last few years. And if somebody wanted one now, they might want a little more, you know. Who knows?
Right, because if something's not for sale, it's gonna cost you.
It's a good story, Zuckerman, to get like a Rodney Dangerfield buying the world's cheapest GTO and trying to go to these meets.
Right.
Hey, I got a GTO too. Hey, who's the new guy?
It is clubby, and most of them are longtime owners. So, you know, I was offered a GTO in 1970. $8,600. I've got the ad. I'd keep it there just to annoy myself. $8,600 for sale right in Beverly Hills. And it's the GTO that's owned by Tom Price now. And, I mean, you know, what did I know? I had a 4-cam at the time, which I just bought, and I'd paid over $10,000 for that. The GTO didn't have shiny wheels, and I was definitely into my chrome wheel period. You know?
Right.
Roll-up windows. It was nice. And I was driving my 4-cam daily, and I looked at that GTO, and I thought, you know, kind of smelled, and it was a race car, and I thought, nah, I think I'll pass.
51 years of misery. That's 51 years since that.
Jesus
Christ.
The one
Christ.
That got away.
You know what? I don't really angst over it, but I just think, you know, if I'd have been Alan Dukadney or Miles Collier, some guys that really had a real depth of knowledge, I've never considered myself like so knowledgeable. You know, I've just kind of bought what I've liked, and I've never let too much knowledge get in my way. You know, if it's something pretty, I'll buy it. And so for me, that GTO just looked like kind of a less attractive 4-cam. And so I just, you know, what the heck. So I just laugh about it now. I mean, I don't...
When I first moved to L.A. and I started working on Seinfeld and started making money, and I just lived in this little house in Hollywood, and I just started I started making a lot of money for me. And Jerry at one point said, what are you going to do with it? I go, I think I might buy this Ferrari GTO, but they're really expensive. At that point, they were $450,000, which was completely unheard of for a car, right? And I just thought, well, yeah, what if they go down? What if they go down?
And you know,
he talked you out of the Lusso too, right?
He didn't talk me out of it. No. He didn't say that. But in my own head, it was such an astronomical price for an automobile. It was the height of a ridiculous notion.
Well, they did
go down.
And
boy, do I regret that.
They did go. You remember in the late 80s.
Yeah. They went as high as like 800, and then they, I don't know if they went down from there.
In the late 80s, I was offered $1,250,000 for my 4-cam, and my house might have had a value of 5 or $500,000. Wow. And I turned it down, but that was in the late 80s. Wow. And the guy, it was a fellow from Japan, and he wanted a GTO. So a friend of mine, George Dyer, had a GTO. And I called George Dyer, and the fellow said he would pay up to $15 million for a GTO. So I called George thinking, you know, by the way, I have brokered so many cars. I've never taken a penny proudly ever from anybody. So I called George and I said, George, there's a fellow in my garage that wants a GTO and he has a budget of $15 million. And George had been asking a little less than that. But George, whatever the market was, George always like made it a little higher. So he said, well, Bruce, it would take $17 to buy it today. And so the guy in my garage just said, no, $15 is my limit. And that was it. Now, that is the same GTO that Brandon Wang has now. Brandon Wang bought that car for around $4 million. So it went, the prices of, I mean, so in the late 80s, you know, they were getting premiums for, you know, the 88 and 89 and 90 Testarossas, mm-hmm. and it dropped down. So people say, oh, you can't pay too much. You can just pay too early. No, because you can't, I mean, it did catch up eventually, but.
Right, right.
But, I mean, so you can, I think if people go into this with the idea that I'm going to make it, bunch of dough, you know, I think that's the wrong way to go.
It's fun. Somebody will call me up and say, should I get a 997 with 70,000 miles or should I get a 993 with 100,000 miles? Which one's a better investment? No, brother, those are used cars. Those are not investments. Yeah. Buy them, enjoy them. And like you, I've never bought anything in the hopes that I'd make a dollar.
Your stuff is so tasteful. I mean, you have exquisite. I mean, you don't look like you have good taste.
No, I don't. Not at all.
You're not for television yet.
Right.
It's true.
No, this is good. This is good.
I'm just kidding. But I mean, what you have bought, I kind of think like myself. You know, if it's just knocks you out, you buy it.
Right.
And that's what you bought. Knockout stuff.
If you guys are in the market to buy a car, you want to go to collectingcars.com. The huge U.S. auction sale of a 918 Spyder. Which recently sold for $1.5 million. Collectingcars.com has auctions that blast around the world. Do you know these guys at Collecting Cars?
I don't know.
They're an online auction site, and they have a global audience, and they sell lots of primo stuff. You know, so when people
Is this the one from the UK that's moving?
It's from the UK.
Now.
They're here in LA. They're all over the place. Australia. They're taking over the world. Poland's next, Zuckerman. They're going after Poland. This was their first $1 million plus auction sale since launching in the U.S. on June. And on the same night as the 918 Spyder sale, Collecting Cars also sold a Rosso Corsa Ferrari 488 GTB Volcano Red McLaren 12C and a Willow Green Porsche GT3 RS with a Sharkworks. Hello, Sharkworks 4.1 exhaust. Check them out, though. You know, you're at your desk right now. You're not doing anything. Go to collectingcars.com. Sign up for their daily email. You'll see the cars. You don't have to bother Bruce, me, or Zuckerman. You just go there. They've got tons of stuff. 50,000-plus users, bidders in 90 countries. 90. That's how you make money. List your car on Collecting Cars for free and sell to a global audience. Why sell your car anywhere else? No ordinary auction, no ordinary cars. And I believe you can list for free, right? They can list your car for free. There you go.
How'd you read that well?
You're good. Very fluent.
I'm sleepy. Thank you. I'm sleepy. I've been working for 4 hours on a Zoom. Bruce, you know what I wanted to ask you about? Because you're one of these unique guys, you know. And it's hard to think about it, too. Like, Zuckerman and I have been part of the Southern California car scene for 20 years already, right? And you've been here for
70.
You've got such a rich history, you know, from the Peterson Auto Museum and everything else. Like, something I didn't ask you the last time was, like, what's been your favorite kind of decade of Southern California car hobbyism, I guess, if it's the right word? You know, when I think about our times here, I think about our drives on the PCH and going to Bill's, and it's a moment in time. And then I had the kind of Hollywood phase and driving to work and cool stuff. But you were really there for the birth of a lot of this stuff. Like, what do you think
so,
back?
So, you know, I grew up in the 40s here. So, I mean, it was hot rods for me. That was like the dream car. That's the picture I had up on my wall, so to speak. And it's gone through phases. You know, I went through hot rod, and then I decided, classic cars. I really like classic cars. So I've gone through different phases just as my own life progressed. I think, and they've all been exciting. I think when Steve Earle started the Historics back in the 70s, those were amazing times. And that's when Chris Cord and Steve Earle and all those guys would drive their GTOs from L.A. up to Monterey and then race them and drive them home. So, you know, for me, that was a real turning point. When I discovered that, they did that along with the Pebble Beach Concours. I'd never been to the Pebble Beach Concours, so that kind of opened up that whole spectrum. But I've just been really fortunate. I mean, L.A. is the epicenter. It just is. I've been to... I mean, you guys are global. I mean, you've been around. There's no place like L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the Peterson has contributed to that. But I think it's just in people's DNA here.
Were you part of that Mulholland racing scene?
No, but that, you know, there's several Mulholland
Why not,
racing
though?
Scenes. You know, some guy did a video, you know, with a GTO. Did you see that thing?
No.
It's Super 8 movie. If you know how to Google, right?
I can Google. Yeah, tell me what to put in. G?
If you go G?
G?
Well, what it is, this fellow made Super 8 movies along Mulholland and going out to
Right. I saw some of this
It's been a
stuff.
While. It's probably been a year or so since it was on. But I just happened to see it recently. And that's when GTOs were, you know, under 10 grand, so to speak. You know, and I remember Chris Cord and Steve Earle, they bought, you know, that Penske Sunoco 512?
Right.
Chris Cord bought that brand new, you know, right from Ferrari. It's been 20 years now, but I got a call from a Beverly Hills policeman that said, Bruce, there's a lady with a Ferrari in her garage, and her husband died like 11 years ago, and she wants to sell it. Will you go look at it? I said, you know, I'm not a dealer, and I don't really know the value of all these things. He said, well, I've already made a big deal that you'd come look at it. So I went over there. So, and I mean, I could walk. This is less than a mile from my house. And this lady opens her garage. She had a motorhome parked in front of the garage. She moved the motorhome, opened up, and covered up in her garage was a 275 GTB 2-cam, original paint yellow, outside gas cap, long nose, 6 carburetor. I mean, that's like the ultimate spec. And her name was Michelle Enrage, and her husband was an Austrian Olympic ski, team member. And she bought that car from Chris Cord in 1966. He did. Chris Cord and his wife, Katrina, did their honeymoon in that car. Now, and it's now owned by Bill Harlan up in the wine country. I helped that happen. And that's a whole other story, but there are cars around here. But Chris Cord's father passed away when he was like an infant, and his mother, Annalie, married Bill Doheny. Bill Doheny was kind of really dialed in. He was a friend of Ernie McAfee's up on Sunset. So the Doheny family is really my 4-cam I bought from Bill Doheny, you know, 1970. So there were guys like Chris Cord. Steve Earle's family had oil money. When Steve was in high school, he bought a 300 SL, brand new, from the factory. Picked it up at the factory. I mean, there were guys here. Dino Martin had a P4, a yellow P4. I mean, I'd seen that on several occasions. I mean, this town just had the stuff. I mean, it was way over my head. I didn't. And I remember, I think it was Steve bought a brand new LM. And then this last, have you ever heard of the Brothers Collection in Salem, Oregon?
No.
I don't think very many people have. It is epic, okay? They own over 1,000 cars, and they've got a museum with about 300. But one of the, and they've got great stuff, but one of them is a GT40, a street spec GT40. And I was reading the lineage on this car, and it was owned by Steve Earle. And I remember when Steve Earle had that car, and he had it up at Tahoe, and Dick Messer, who was a longtime friend of Steve Earle's, they just used to run around town. So they had all. There were guys here that just had the money, had the taste and the knowledge, and just ran around in really cool stuff.
What were you driving when you were a kid?
Well, my first car was a hand-me-down from my great-aunt. It was a 50 Plymouth. So that kind of tells. And I shared it with my sister. So,
there you go.
So, you know, my early cars were not extraordinary.
Right.
My parents had no time for cars. First of all, we didn't really have any money, and their parents couldn't even afford cars. So the idea of wasting your time on a car, there couldn't be a bigger waste of time.
Right,
you could be working.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm I make my family crazy. I actually like work more than play. It's just the way I am. I just don't do well just sitting on a beach somewhere. So so I had the best paper corner in L.A. And you would know the corner. It's right in front of Pizza Mocha.
Highland and Melrose. Right.
At Highland Avenue, heading north, and I had the evening news. So I was there from like 3:30 or 4 till 6. And I was hauling it in. I mean, I don't remember what I was making, but I'm guessing I probably made $2 or $3 a night when buddies of mine were getting 50 cents a week allowance.
Right.
So that's when I bought a doodle. My parents hated this stuff, so I bought a doodle bug and then a wizard and a BSA, and I hid them in friends' garages. You know, I was like 13 years old running around like a little hoodlum.
I did that too. I had a secret motorcycle. That's what you do when you're 13. Yeah. So you buy these motorcycles with your paperboy money?
With your dimes.
And then what did your friends tell their parents when they came across this thing?
None of my friends were even, like, even understood or were interested. You know, right. I just need a corner of your garage.
Ticket, you know? I see.
And so, I dated my wife on motorcycles. My parents didn't even know I owned a motorcycle.
Did you need a motorcycle license when you were 13 back in the day?
No. You needed a driver's license, so I did have a problem there one time.
Yeah, yeah. But you were still doing it.
Absolutely. motorcycles were absolutely, I thought.
They're probably like electric scooters right now, because all the 13-year-olds are on those right now. Yeah. They're supposed to have their licenses, but they don't.
Well, there was a thing called a doodle bug. During the war years, people were making.
I don't know what a doodle bug is. Should I Google that?
No gas, it was basically a Briggs & Stratton lawnmower engine. That was my very first motorized scooter.
Wow.
And it had absolutely no brakes, so I almost killed myself on that. So that's when I switched to a Whizzer, kind of a bits of Whizzer. I bought the frame and then the gas tank and then kind of rolled into it.
So it's like the Taco mini bikes. Yeah, I'm looking at these.
It looks like it could fit in your trunk.
Yeah, yeah, these little guys.
Dangerous.
Wow. Yeah, super dangerous. That's what you were driving around on.
I seriously had that thing for maybe a month, and I really thought I was going to hurt myself. So I had the good sense to sell it and go to a motorbike.
Something
and then
with
I
brakes.
Wanted to go from a Whizzer to a Mustang,
right?
Which was like the Mustang was like the Hell's Angel bike for the teenagers,
right?
I didn't do that. By the way, how's your buddy with all the Hell's Angel stuff?
Oh, Bo Bushnell at the Outlaw Archive. It's fantastic.
Does he get like death threats? Are there guys that are not?
Lately the death threats have ebbed. There seems to be some sort of a detente between him and the clubs that aren't happy with him having all of that stuff. So things are cool right now, and there's actually a lot of interest in what we're doing down there.
It's always fascinated me, and as long as you weren't like wearing the colors, were you inappropriately? In other words, for him, it's artwork,
right?
And history. I think it's very cool.
Well, it's you were there too in the 60s for the explosion of all of that biker culture and all of the movies that they were making. Like Roger Corman was making those movies back in the 60s, like the Hell's Angels movies and whatnot.
You know what he wants this for the museum. That's where he's going with this.
At some point, it would be a great exhibit.
I
went to Chocolate George's funeral in San Francisco.
Chocolate George was a very well-known member of the Frisco Hells Angels, and when he died, there's a poster that shows the procession going through San Francisco. It's like as if the Pope died, and I think that Janis Joplin and a bunch of they were playing on the back of a stake bed truck.
Okay, so know a lot about it. Okay, so I'm up there.
Why did you go, Bruce?
Okay, but so in the 60s,
were
you
in the Hells Angels?
Oh, God.
You're there selling newspapers.
Victor Romero, and we for some reason we were just up in San Francisco, and it was at a time where you might just enjoy the
a little marijuana, a little
whatever,
Mary Jane, a little reefer,
and so reefer madness. So somebody said there's a free concert in Golden Gate
Park. Yeah.
And it was in the afternoon. So my friend and I thought, why not? You know, so I think they said it started like at 1 or 2 or 3 something. So we got there early, like really early. And they had like what was going to be a little bandstand. And so we were square in front of it. And then people started filling in. And it turned out, I talked to somebody that was there, and I said, like, what's going on? Well, this is a funeral. This is a, celebration of life for Chocolate George. And I'm going like, who? Well, he was a famous Hell's Angel. I'm going, whoa, you know, maybe we shouldn't be here, you know. So we moved a little further back from the stage. We ended up being quite a bit further from the stage. But all of a sudden, this parade of bikes, and also what was interesting to me is there were like luxury cars that would pull up. The guy would open the trunk, pull out his colors. I mean, these, you know, you didn't know who was, you know, some of the Hell's Angels looked like you and me, you know.
Right.
And, really?
And, oh, my God.
In the 60s,
was,
yeah.
Wow. It was unbelievable. And Janis Joplin and the Holding Company, or Big Brother and the Holding, yeah, whatever, they played, and, I mean, it was epic. I've never forgotten it.
You know, that's such a... You should go on camera about that. Your Chocolate George, he was called Chocolate George because he drank chocolate milk. I mean, you know, it's not the scariest thing to hear that this, your terrifying,
like Howard Hughes.
Hell's Angel was an aficionado of chocolate milk. You know, we really do need to talk about a display down at the Peterson. And one thing that you might know, and I hope you would know, or someone there, really, how do we display this stuff so that it has maximum impact? How do you display maybe a set of colors or little photos or little letters that really can immerse people into what that time was like for these people?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's something that has to be like thought out because, right, first of all, it's not like we want to endorse misbehavior.
Right.
And we don't, when we like attracting a diverse crowd for sure, but we don't want to offend anybody, and we don't want to have, because there was already a shooting at the Peterson.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And so
that would be Biggie Smalls, if I'm not mistaken.
That would be Biggie Smalls. So, I mean, it's a fine line. I just happen to be one that,
it's the vehicles. I think you would start with the vehicles. They've got the choppers and the first choppers, and I think that would be your way in from there. And then, as you say,
I think you're right. I think it's a better, I think that's really a good approach, Spike. I think the better deal, and I know you've got some choppers,
right,
but I think a display of choppers is something that would very well fit into what,
yeah,
we do. Because we have, I don't know if you've followed any, we have a Richard Varner, who owns Moto America, has a motorcycle gallery there. And to do one with choppers would be, I think you're 100%.
Yeah,
right.
And
yeah,
then
because
you can
chopper was really invented here in West L.A.
Right.
And in Mar Vista, in Venice. These,
are you a kind of a chopper authority?
No, but I would not say that at all, but I do know enough to know.
He's a chop salad authority.
He's a chop salad. What's my salad first? I do happen to know that the notion in the 50s of taking a perfectly good Harley Davidson full bagger like you would get him from the dealership and start tossing shit away and cutting down fenders and raking things or getting an FLA front end and putting it on, these guys were at the forefront of a style and a movement.
Because, you know, it would be great if you were interested and felt like it was something you'd like to do, that you could become, you know, like somebody that we would go to and would organize this. I mean, because you own some. We need an authority like yourself that would come and curate the show, because
That's great. There's a guy we call Bill the Fish, who was a member of a club called the Galloping Goose.
Oh, I remember the Galloping Goose. It's Chosen Few, Galloping Goose, Hessians, you know.
Right, and he went in the very early 60s. So he had hitched a ride out from Florida, and next thing was, hanging out at some sort of hot dog stand with bikers, and got a bike, and he was there in the early 60s, and he can tell you how they made these things and what they were doing back then to get the look.
We need to talk about that.
But before we do that, fall is here, gentlemen, and we could all use a stiff breeze. That's right. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Ooh. Do you like Blue Chew? Have you ever had Blue Chew?
Is that like a chew? Like,
yeah, kind of. Yeah.
No. It's
don't tell him I'm playing with him.
Okay, play
why
with
are you
him?
Telling him that? Guys, confidence can take you far in life. It can also help in the bedroom, especially when it comes time to step up to the plate. That's where Blue Chew comes in. Now do you get what Blue Chew is? Blue Chew is a unique online service, Bruce, that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. Have I interested you yet?
honey, what are you chewing? Are you chewing gum during dinner?
Bruce.
Hello, Bruce. 51 years.
If you're wondering what the process is like to sign up, it's simple. You just go to BlueChew.com. You consult with one of their licensed medical providers, who are very beautiful, by the way. It's like buying lingerie. There's always a lovely lady when you go there. And once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's done online, so no doctor's visits, no awkward conversations. No waiting in line at the pharmacy. Look at Bruce staring at me like he's thinking, do I want this?
Can I get a franchise?
Do I need to be, could I roll this into Gary somehow? Where you get where you get a Rolex and you get Blue Chew? Blue Chew tablets are made in the U.S. and prepared and shipped right to your door. Visit BlueChew.com. And here's what you're going to get. All right, here's what you get just for listening to all that. You can try Blue Chew for free. What you do is you order it, you go in, you put in the promo code SPIKE911, my name, my favorite car, and it is absolutely free. You're going to try for it. I think you might have to just pay for shipping. It's just a couple bucks. Go to BlueChew.com, promo code SPIKE911, receive your first month free. Look at that. What do you think, Bruce? Are you in?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Do you have to swallow when you chew?
I think it's the chewable pill. Yeah, I have it at home. I got my delivery of Blue Chew, but I'm afraid to try it.
I haven't tried it yet. We were going to try it at the podcast. We're all going to chew it. Some and see what happens.
But part of the rules of Blue Chew, you can't give it to anybody. Everybody has to order. So we're not quite sure yet. But we have a long history with Blue Chew in that we did one ad and then they canceled us because of Zuckerman's comments of his jokes.
And after
a year, we've wooed them back. We're happy to have
free
them back.
Ads for a year. I'm begging them to come back. I seduce them back with my constant pushing of their product.
And we ask our listeners, and they did last week. They went nuts. They were all over the Blue Chew Instagram site going, I'm only here for Spike and Zuckerman. They definitely got their money's worth, Blue Chew. And we'll have to think what we're gonna do with this ad.
We will not say the things we used to say.
Look, they sponsored two shows in a row.
I will not talk about snorting it through my
Zuckerman,
hose.
Please. I have a bunch of questions for you, Bruce. Why don't we start there for this next and last act of this show? Let me see if anybody's asked some interesting questions. Lots of folks who...
Is this live?
No. Okay. It feels live, though, right?
Yeah, it does.
I'm hosting it like a live show, so I
don't know if people were calling in or
no. I put a little thing on Instagram if I think about it on the way as I drive up. Mechanical Vices would like to know your thoughts on building a collection and how you've approached it over the years.
Yeah. Well, it's very simple. You start with what you like, and for me, it has to be has to be attractive, you know. I started collecting vintage hot rods, and people would send me pictures of just awful, ugly things, you know, that just didn't work. I mean, I don't care how famous it is; it's got to be good looking. So for me, it has to be something that appeals to my aesthetic. So I would say, it has to appeal to my aesthetic. And then it generally has to be something that I can drive. I mean, I've been offered some extraordinary race cars, which all you can do is just look at them. But I do the driving experience is important,
hugely important. Right.
So
we've been talking a lot lately because our friend from New York has been trying to figure out if he should buy a Morgan or not, and he's been doing it for 31 years. And a lot of people
been thinking about it for 31 years.
Yeah, he's been thinking, but lately another car was offered him. He bought a new one. He didn't know if he should buy the old one. But the question came up with collectors, and you know, we were talking to Leno about this too. Some people feel like, oh, you have the money. What's the point? Just grab it, right? But it's not that simple. Like, there needs to be curation for a lot of us, and otherwise your collection gets...
Well, when you use the word collection, that to me, you know, like, then you should have a theme of some kind. Mm-hmm. I don't think of myself as a collector. I really don't. I have bought my cars over 50 years, and I've never thought, well, I'm going to put a collection of Ferraris or Porsches or race cars or hot rods. I bought them one at a time. If something finds me or I find it and I really, really like it, I buy it. It doesn't have to fit in any niche or anything. I think
not a collector. That's an interesting concept. Bruce is saying he's not a collector. He doesn't have a collection. He's an enthusiast of particular individual cars.
And a driver.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that
philosophy. I think of myself as an enthusiast, not a collector. And so the gentleman that asked the question, I've got a friend of mine, you know, Morgans are like an acquired taste, and they're like in your DNA, like some people with Porsches. That guy should have bought that Morgan. Just buy it.
Yeah.
And I always say you're better off buying it, and then if you don't like it, then disposing of it, rather than just having that lingering thing. Like, I always wanted a Morgan, and all of a sudden you get to be my age, and then it's too damn late.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you have, you can sample it. It's okay to sample it and then get rid of it. Yeah, that's a very good point. That's kind of
we should tell our friend that before he can't get in and out of it. Just get the damn thing and see if he likes it.
He's got one.
I used to use 80 as like the benchmark. You know,
right.
A friend of mine would say, you know, I've been wanting to buy. I said, just you know, wait till you're 80, then you can really afford it.
now
I'm 80 and I'm thinking, shit, you know, that's not good.
Here's a very common question I'm sure you get all the time, so you can just answer it for today. But Peter Pattis in Switzerland is asking, which Italian car is your favorite? Just pick one and tell us why.
Well, it would have to be a Ferrari. For the most part, they're simply beautiful. And I bought my Ferrari in 1970. I actually was driving a Porsche. And about a few blocks from here on Robertson, or is it Robertson? On Doheny and Wilshire was Estee Zipper. It was a big Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove in with my little Porsche, and here was this yellow 4-cam sitting there. And I still don't consider myself a Ferrari guy. But I just fell in love with that 4-cam. To me, it would be like seeing that, you know, the Countach or the Yellowbird or something on the wall, whatever that dream car was for you. And I'd never seen one. I didn't have a picture on the wall because I'd never even seen one before. So I bought that, and that was, and I've still owned it. You know, 50 years of that car. And so I would just say I think the Ferrari is a well managed brand. I think there's a good reason maybe to buy an early Lamborghini, because I think early on the Mirror or the Countach. I mean, if I were,
but you have to pick one.
Well,
Peter says
I would say Ferrari.
But what model Ferrari?
If I could have one Ferrari, it would be a short wheelbase Berlinetta.
There you go.
I think that car kind of does it all.
And you have one of those. You have the one.
I have the one.
Yeah, my favorite car in the world. We talk about it a lot.
My 60th birthday present. 60.
Oh, really?
60 was a big turning point for me because I'd always been, you know, pretty conservative spender, and at 60, I bought a Rolex watch that I'd wanted. And I bought that short wheelbase.
No kidding.
This is for me. You know,
Do you ever just stop at Highland and Melrose in that short wheelbase and park there and see yourself hustling newspapers? That's something you should do.
That is definitely something I should do. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I grew up, you know, a couple blocks from here, so I just walked to. But, you know, I have, like, pinched myself sometimes, like, my son came and saw the cars, and I've been lucky here and there, and he said, how did you ever end up here? And I really didn't have an answer for him, but I do remember, I so vividly remember the truck coming by and throwing that bundle of papers out onto the island, you know, that little grassy island.
Right.
And I enjoyed that job. It was never work for me. What was work for me one time, I set bowling pins at the Pan Pacific used to have a bowling alley. And that was work.
Organ grinding was work.
Have you ever? Yeah, everything else is play, but that was work.
Towel boy at the brothel was really my least favorite job. What happens is that I was never a paper boy. I always wanted to be one. I was a bag boy. I wasn't a paper boy. When they throw the newspapers out, what happens when you don't sell enough of them and they're leftover papers? Did you just...
Well, I would just sell them until they were gone.
And you would?
Just knew
okay.
Kind of the amount.
So that's how
Being
it worked.
Being a paper boy is different, though. Because being a paperboy, you're
delivering
your bicycle around at night. The worst part, and the reason my...
So what did you call yourself if you weren't a paperboy?
Well, I had a paper corner. But I didn't have to collect. See, paper
corner
boys
have
to collect.
Yes.
They've got to go to everybody's house and collect.
Once a week or whatever.
Yeah, in that little envelope.
And so my parents were never happy about that. They weren't happy with me kind of walking into the traffic, but it was a two-lane deal. And there was an island there, and it was a signal. So I didn't think
cars
anything.
Never jump curbs. Zuckerman can tell you firsthand.
Particularly back then in the 40s.
Particularly back then, right.
Asbestos brakes.
Nope, it never happens. I got to squeeze one more ad in, and we'll take a couple more questions. How about? All right. You're a busy guy, Bruce, right? Why are you thinking about what to wear? Why don't you just embrace the radically efficient Mack Weldon Daily Wear System? This will go with your blue chew, Bruce. The Daily Wear System is a selection of clothes rooted in smart design, made with performance fabrics and built to work together. From breathable t-shirts and polos to stylish button-ups and shorts, underwear and beyond, Mack Weldon makes it easy for you to dress for work, leisure, and play, or wherever your summer takes you. You know, during the pandemic, all I wore is Mack Weldon, and I'm still wearing it. They have those pants that you can work out in, you can do Zooms in, and then you can go to sleep in.
It's, and chew.
It's super, yeah. Well, you add Blue Chew, and you have the room for the Blue Chew, too. For the ultimate lazy Sunday, their Ace sweat shorts have modern tailoring and pair perfectly with their ultra-soft, ultra-upgraded Pima tees. I have all that stuff. For weekend traveling, both far and near, their silver knit polo and radius shorts are the perfect high-tech, highly packable combo. So here's what you do. Now that summer's over, it's still hot here, go to MackWeldon.com. Look for their daily wear system. You're going to get 20% off their first order. Visit MackWeldon. Okay, now this is one of those different ones, Zuckerman. You know, I didn't even know this until recently, but we have our own micro sites on a lot of these sponsor places. So, some are codes you put in if you buy it, but if you put in this address...
We get money?
Just go check it out. It says Spike's Car Radio, Mack Weldon. It's kind of cool. MackWeldon.com/Spike. Go to that site, MackWeldon.com/Spike. Use promo code Spike for 20% off Mack Weldon. That's our last ad for the show.
I have something for Bruce.
You have a question? Go ahead, Zuckerman.
I have. Well, you know what? I'm listening to you, and I'm listening how long you've been collecting cars. At some point, Ferriston and I want to have a Bruce Meyer car. We want you. We want you to pick a car, a little piece.
I know
that
which
you
one
you want to get rid of, and we're going to buy
look
that
at his
from
face.
You. We're going to relieve the because you probably have a lot of pressure. All those cars, like a tick, just getting bigger and bigger. So we will take.
Do you ever sell cars?
You know,
because some guys don't, right? Like a Jay Leno, a David Letterman, they do not.
Okay, so I'm this year.
Yes,
my son was doing a project, and so I was going to invest with him, and I thought, you know, rather than write a check, I'll sell some cars. So I picked four cars to sell, and I wish I'd never sold them because you know
we missed.
How did you sell them? Privately or auction?
So I sold. I had a GT 350 65.
Oh,
I mean the
year.
Best in the world. It was the one. I'd owned it 35 years.
That's the year.
And a friend of mine mentioned that he would like one, so I thought, good, I'm going to sell it. So I sold
it
to him. And in fact, we're doing a rally in Pennsylvania at the end of this month. He says, you come in anytime you want to drive it. So I feel like that's in the family. I had a 65 Porsche Cabriolet. Just a car that I'd had, and it was a car that, see,
what color?
It was slate gray with a red interior. It was beautiful. It was the finest 356 I'd ever seen in my life.
Bruce
Canepa sold it for $250, so that'll give you an idea.
Right.
But so I sold that. I had a new Speedster, a new Porsche Speedster, which, you know, I really wasn't driving all that much. And when, then the car
See, Zuckerman right there. You know, not to digress, the GT3 Touring with a PDK is a car you're going to drive more than a Speedster's great with manual transmission, but you will not drive it in the city as much. I had that same experience.
Well, it's interesting because I'm now buying the GT3 Touring. And for me, it seems like the PDK would be the perfect solution. But my son and the dealer, everybody says, get the stick. So
they're wrong. Look, let me tell you something right now. Here's your choice. do you want a car that you can drive all the time and put a million miles on, or do you want a car that everybody goes, oh, that's cool, and then you make a little money on the way out? That's your decision making. And myself and Zuckerman and Seinfeld are all PDKing right now.
I'll tell you also, they're going to have however many other iterations of a GT3 touring before this 992 is done.
And what
the
if
chances
I,
are you're not going to keep and whatever your first GT3 992
and
is.
What if I told you that there could be something coming along from Porsche that has a manual transmission? That's pretty damn good.
They keep telling you this is our last one, and then it keeps happening.
No. There's something coming.
Big.
There's something big. There's something big, and there's something small. That's all I'm going to say.
You're aware of this?
I'm aware.
Yeah.
What was the fourth car you sold?
What's
that? You gave us three cars. You didn't. You
yeah.
Said,
what's the what's the last one?
Was an Alpha. It's called a TZ. Alpha.
Oh, we love
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, that trunk, car's beautiful.
Yeah, with the
well, no, that the trunk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they made it. They made an SC, and they right. and those were like little jelly beans.
Right.
And then they made one the Coda Tronco, which was stretched.
Cuddle, yeah.
But then they had the TZ, which was Tubolari Zagato, which was a tube frame, completely different car, but it looked, you know, kind of a. You know, looked not unlike a Coda Tronco, you know, the.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd had the car for like 3 years, and I drove it to Malibu one time. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, if Malibu comes along, and what do I want to drive out there? It probably wouldn't be that, you know.
Right.
And also, most of my cars have a story attached, and I like the story. You know, I like, it's not just another one of those. This is the one that did that or was
yep.
owned by so-and-so. So all four of those cars, none of them had a story, so to speak. And so I thought, you know, they're all replaceable if I really need
yeah, them. Yeah. No, I mean, that you've got the experience of a lot of years here, and you're right. I think about, when you just say stories, I think about my watch collection, and I know exactly the watches that have meaning, and then there are these other ones that don't quite, right? And it does enrich the experience. Like you're saying, your 60th birthday, that watch, that car, that can be a very special drive for you. Anytime you want it, it's there for you, right?
Exactly.
Reflective and nice.
And if you're telling people about a car, it's nice, you know, like
yeah.
that's the first one or that one won Le Mans.
Right.
This is the only one this way or that way, you know, so it makes it a little special.
Stories, cars. All right,
like
let's do a couple questions, a couple
sure.
more questions,
yeah,
then
yeah.
we got to wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
This is Dr. Kyle Stanley wants to know, new rough Yellowbird versus old rough Yellowbird.
Well,
do you have a preference?
There's such a difference in the driving of those two cars. First of all, you can still buy a new one, probably. And the old ones are really hard to find now. The old ones are very primitive. They're like so fast. And, you know, it just depends. Like, if you're going to go touring in it, I would say a new one because they're so sophisticated. But the old one is just the one that walk the walk.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if I were given a choice of the two, I would go with the old for sure, because that there's the story. The new one is a beautiful car.
Do you here's Scott I9. When will second generation Trans Ams be featured on the lawn at Pebble? Do you think they ever will be?
Well, you know, I've also eliminated that from my vocabulary.
Yeah.
Right.
What's that?
Never.
Never. Okay. Mr. Horton, 74, wants to know, what is something completely unexpected that you've learned about the automotive world as a result of the Peterson Auto Museum? So I guess in your years at the Peterson, what has been one of the most biggest surprises or remarkable finds? Or?
Well, that's a really good question. I'd probably have to give that some thought, you know, but one thing being so intimately involved with the Peterson, I've just learned to understand the passion that people have, and it's about the people. You could be the last man on earth with a GTO, and if you don't have a place to show it or share it, it just is meaningless, you know. So I think how much joy it's brought me and other people that have displayed cars there and shared cars. So the whole car thing is all about the people. And just being here with you two guys, I mean, both of you are such great characters. I mean, really, it's a treat. I mean, you could turn this mic off, and we could probably sit here for another 5 hours, and there could be not even a car in the room, you know. So I just think it just comes down to the people. I just love people. I always have. Every business I've been in, except setting bowling pins, has been, you know, cultivating customers and friendships.
Candlestick Bruce.
What's that?
You met little candles? Was it little candlesticks? They had those, that bowling, or nine pins?
I was also the one cup handler of the two girls in one cup. What? Bruce, you did that too? Anyway, Bruce, we love you, man. You are living Southern California car history from the gilded stages
the
of Pebble
days.
Beach to the corners of newspaper selling mozzarella pizza.
My candle shop. Don't forget my candle shop.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't even get to any of the Gary's Rolex stuff, but you got to come back again.
Here, put me down.
We'll have you back. Anyways, that's our show. Zuckerman, you got anything to say before we go?
No, just stay safe.
Thank you to our sponsors, Blue Chew, Mack Weldon, and, of course, CollectingCars.com, who buys the show every week. We love you guys, too. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio, brought to you by Hangar 56. Listen to new episodes every Wednesday, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.